Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And welcome back to Hardline right here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Taking your calls and texts at 716-803-0930. And political strategist and partner at Mazziello, Martucci & Calabrese, Carol Calabrese, the man himself, joins me. Carol, so many things to talk about, and there's no such thing as a slow news day in politics these days.
That's for sure.
First and foremost, we'll get into the Trump rally. President Trump was in Tulsa last night in a few minutes. But first, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on Duane Whitmer, the Libertarian candidate that I had on at the top of the show at 10 o'clock. And whether you think third-party candidates have any shot when you're in a race that's as heated and, you know, sort of typical of the Republican-Democrat kind of thing. And then you have somebody like Beth Parlato on the conservative line who is picking up steam. Do you think somebody like Whitmer on the Libertarian line has a shot?
Probably not. I mean, we're a two-party system. It's in our tradition, our heritage. It's just such a long shot. I think in all of my days, there's very, very few candidates who win public office based on one minor party line. I can think of a few, but it is the exception and not the rule, and they're really spaced out over the years. So I think a lot of these third-party candidates are looking at the long game. They're not looking to win an election that's right in front of them. They're looking at making points, making their issues known, establishing a base in New York State, and building it to the point where they can attract enough votes every 4 years during a gubernatorial race to stay on the ballot and maybe move up on the ballot based on the number of votes they get. So I really do think that a lot of them bring up very legitimate issues, but they're playing a long game, not the electoral victory game for the next election.
The other thing, too, Carol, that strikes me is that people may not be familiar with the libertarian principles, and I think that's a way to shine a light on these other parties out of the so-called standard of Dems and Republicans. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. In fact, I've often said that, especially with younger people, the I generation, the Z generation, have been born and raised into a system where I call them libertarian consumers. Because of the Internet, they have access worldwide to a huge array of goods and products and services when they go to purchase something, and then they have the ability to customize it. Those are libertarian principles. Government can't give them that level of choice nor that level of customization. It just can't do it. It's impossible. Usually government approaches issues with a one-size-fits-all. That's totally contrary to the way these young people have been raised. And I tell my classes at UB, eventually you're going to start asking, why can't the political system give me the same range of choices and customization, or at least something better than a one-size-fits-all approach, that the private sector gives me? So I think going forward over the next 10, 20 years, those libertarian principles that exist today in the private sector that people live by and have become very accustomed to and very supportive may find their way into the political realm. And that's where the Libertarian Party may be looking, again, in the long range, down the road, to be able to position themselves to say, we offer alternatives that give you, the individual, the same kind of choices in the public policy realm as you have in the private sector, if not exactly the same, at least a bigger range. And that's why you should look at the Libertarian Party. I think that's the game they're playing.
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, the overall choices we have in life in general are so much greater than even when you and I were kids. Everything from food to electronics to media, and certainly I think politics falls into that category as well. It's really kind of a fascinating microcosm of society, I think.
And if we think that we have lots of choices and the ability to customize products and goods and services today, wait 5, 6, 7 years down the road, what's coming? If you read about the technology that's coming that the private sector is going to be employing to give consumers even more choice and more customization, it's in another world. And again, the political world stays pretty much stagnant in one size fits all, limited choice, limited customization, if any. And eventually those two forces are going to collide, especially with younger people today, as I say, in the next 10, 15 years.
No doubt. And, well, Carl, who would have thought we'd be broadcasting from our home kitchen tables, you know? There's an example right there.
I'm sitting outside enjoying the nice weather on my deck, so.
Yeah, it's a good way to work. Let's go to the phone lines. We have a call from Niagara Falls. Let's check in with Frank. Good morning, Frank.
You know, I wanted to tell Senator Ort, you know, it's a big mistake to get real progressives mixed up with liberals and corporate Democrats. You know, we actually have much more in common with you conservatives than you think if you explore the issues and realize that, you know, we actually despise Clinton Cuomo Democrats as much as you do. So, you know, he could probably gain a lot of votes if he realized that. But, you know, we all love our nation and we just want to be free without government or police standing in our way. And progressives look at politics like, what if you had the power to save one person? And let me give you an example of how government destroys people's lives. My best friend worked her whole life to buy properties around Western New York. You know, she's one of the landlords, a class of New Yorkers who no one seems to care about as tenants haven't paid their rent in months, and she's on the edge of ruin. You know, what will a Democrat or a Republican do for her? You know, and even before the COVID-19 crisis, she tried to open a quality used clothing store on her property in Niagara Falls. She bought her stock, worked hard at great expense to set the building up, and the city code enforcement shut her down simply because her building used to be a nightclub, and she kept the beautiful bar as a display area. I mean, come on. You know, the city of Niagara Falls should be begging people to open businesses, not shutting them down. What's a Republican or a Democrat going to do for us? That's what I want to know. I don't want to hear all this division and blame and, you know, this guy and that guy. Just get out there and solve our problem, okay?
Frank, thank you for the call. And, Carol, I think Frank's call reflects the frustration that a lot of people feel, especially if their livelihood is being compromised, whether it's through political problems or through a coronavirus, for goodness sake.
Oh, no question. I could hear the frustration in his voice with government, with bureaucracy, with, you know, the so-called administrative state. Brenda, did I hear Frank correctly at the beginning? Did he identify himself as a progressive?
I believe that's what he said, yes.
If he is a progressive, he might want to reconsider that label, because what he just said, that, you know, the government, an agency of government, shut down a business and how wrong that was. Well, actually, if you read the progressive history and the progressive philosophy, progressives are very comfortable with big government and bureaucratic government, of decisions being made by unelected people. I mean, that's the very core of the progressive philosophy, going back to Woodrow Wilson, who wrote books about the progressive philosophy. And so, you know, progressives are very happy when, you know, Supreme Court rules that government agencies can make up rules and that essentially become laws. And so they basically, unelected bureaucrats get to write the laws. They get to administer the laws, and if there's a dispute, they get to adjudicate the laws. That's the very definition of the administrative state, and that's what the progressive movement was built upon. So Frank maybe want to read a little history about the progressive movement and what their philosophy is, and maybe he might reconsider defining himself as a progressive.
Another gentleman who is very interested in the political world, one of our regular callers, Kevin from Pendleton, checking in. Good morning, Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Yeah, now we are. Me, I had to click there. Good morning, Brenda. Good morning to you, Carl.
Good morning.
You know, I speak as a constituent here on the 27th. I can't breathe You can breathe, Brenda. All of us here, even in America, can breathe. Because you know what? This election here will show where the two-party duopoly of the DNC and the GOP for almost 100 years has had their necks, their knees on our necks, cutting off the oxygen of liberty, that our brains are triggered off to believe that here in the NY27 and even America's future is all based upon either the Democrat or Republican way, and not as JFK said, the American way. You know, as a registered Republican, I hope and pray, NY27, I plead with you, please put your values and your principles and everything for this country and your humanity and your principles before your political party. And I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to vote because I don't want to promote anyone in particular, but I'll tell you something. If you all are concerned about this nonsense about splitting votes and all this kind of thing, just remember, whoever wins this special election, they're just going on a short vacation to D.C. at taxpayers' expense, because anything can happen between now and November. And lastly, you know, this special election will be a mandate to the Democrat and Republican leaderships that once and for all, that we, the people, want to make a difference in what happens the day after the election. Because I tell you what, whether your candidate wins or your candidate loses, right, there's also another bunch of winners other than who wins. You know who's going to be the winners? The winners will be the leaderships of both Democrat and Republican parties, right? And the rest of us have to continue through our miserable lives. So this is what I feel, and I think I speak on behalf of everyone out here in NY27, right? And you know what? If, you know, Nick Dukes of Hazzard, Boss Hogg Langworthy, and Jeremy, the political zealot Zellner, Ralph Moore, you know, even all the way in Washington, Ed Little Nixon Cox, right? This will be the ground zero. I hope it becomes the ground zero in the silent majority standing up and saying something. Because, you know, and thank you, Brenda, for having Dwayne Whitmore on. You know why? He gives some of us an alternative. He gives us an alternative than the same old business as usual, you know? So thank you for doing that. Because I look on the Buffalo News, and I only see the pictures of four, right? And you don't see Mr. Whitmore there. And you tell me if this system is broken and can be fixed. Thank you very much. God bless America.
Kevin, always appreciate your passion. And Carol, let's do a deep dive into NY27. In all of your years in politics, and you teach, and you've been in office, have you ever seen any kind of crazy election like we've got coming up on Tuesday? 2-1-1, essentially.
The short answer is no, and the long answer is hell no. I mean, this is just bizarre. I mean, the whole thing, you know, going back to the indictment of Chris Collins, and, you know, is he in, is he out, and then the election, which was, you know, won by Chris Collins by the skin of his teeth, and then, the sentencing and everything, the chairs coming together and trying to pick a candidate, and the setting of the election, and then the rescheduling of the election. This has just been bizarre. I mean, that's the only word I can think of. And it's no wonder voters are confused, and they're going to have to think, you know, a little bit when they go into this voting booth, make sure they're doing everything in the right order, and they're going to be asked to vote twice. I've never seen anything like it, and it certainly leads to confusion. And, plus, now we have this virus and mail-in voting, and it just even adds the layers of uncertainty.
Well, and let's not forget about, apparently it was Beth Perlotto who filed a complaint against Chris Jacobs. Carol, you had mentioned, you know, it was very interesting when you were on with Susan and Brian earlier this week on WBEN, you had mentioned about the timing of that, how it often happens on a Thursday before the election. And that's no coincidence, right?
Oh, no. That was like a finely choreographed dance, okay? It was like watching the political version of Dancing with the Stars. That's how choreographed it was. And I suspected it was her campaign almost immediately, and I'll tell you why. Literally within hours after the charge made the media and was broadcast on the news, there was an ad. There was a political ad on radio attacking Chris Jacobs. And I said to my wife, I've been involved in producing political radio commercials many, many times in my career. You just don't produce a radio commercial within a few hours. You have to
rent studio space, so it has to be available to you. You have to find an engineer and a producer to be in that studio. You need to write the script. If it involves a voiceover of a professional, you need to go out and hire that talent. You need to rehearse it, and then you need to physically get in the studio and cut it. You don't do that in four, five, 6 hours. I mean, so I believe that commercial was in the can for days, if not weeks, waiting for the charge to be filed and publicized. So that was certainly choreographed, no question in my mind.
Well, it seems like Beth is not playing nice in the sandbox, Carol. Are you surprised at the venom and the division in this race right now?
Oh, it's gotten real nasty, and it's gotten to a different level today. I read that, this is an allegation, but they're saying that she actually had drones flying over this house that Chris Jacobs owns in Orchard,
right,
taking pictures. Now, you know, in my day, there were certain things that were off limits in a political campaign: your family, your spouse, your children, off limits, and your house, your domicile. If you want to demonstrate against an incumbent, you go to his or her office and do it on public space. You don't go to their home and disrupt their home and their neighborhood. So to be flying drones over somebody's house, that's almost scary. That's like 1984 George Orwell kind of stuff. When I read that, I said, wow, we may be entering a whole new period of political campaigns that may very well discourage good people from getting involved.
Well, and I think that's been the case in a lot of races, where a lot of good people are not involved, and we end up seeing the same candidates over and over again. Speaking of candidates, President Trump has endorsed Chris Jacobs twice, and in fact, one of our texters points this out as well. Do you think that is enough to get him over the hump of this? I mean, there's obviously other things too, but how much does the Trump endorsement mean to him? The call from Air Force One, Don Jr. Speaking on Jacobs' behalf. What does that all mean, do you think, in this race?
Assuming that the level of support for Trump in NY27 is at the very, very high, almost in the stratosphere levels that it has been since Donald Trump came down that escalator in 2016 and announced his candidacy, assuming that level of support and enthusiasm still exists in NY27, and every poll that I've seen up until recently says it does, this is very, very important. One of the key determinants of people's Republican votes in that district based on polls was, will they be a supporter? Will the congressional candidate and will the congressperson, once elected, be a supporter of Donald Trump and his policies? All the polls I've seen, that is the number one criteria for people to vote in an election. So endorsements by the president, the son, the family of the president coming in, tweets, emails, mailings, reminding people that, in this case, Chris Jacobs does indeed support the president, and to the point where the president has stepped out and very vocally supported him. And we all know if Chris Jacobs was not a Trump supporter, this president would say so, and say so very loudly. So very important. And, if I was running the Chris Jacobs campaign, I'd want to make as much hay out of those statements and those endorsements and those visits as I could. No question about it.
I'm really curious about how the turnout will be this Tuesday, Carol, because not only do we have a pandemic to worry about in terms of whether it's safe to go, some people might be reluctant to show up at a voting booth and worry about whether there's enough safety compliance being done. But now that we're seeing that the weather might be a little, unpredictable with some heavy rains in the forecast. So we'll see just exactly how many people turn out. But it is certainly an election unlike any other. And speaking of elections and rallies, President Trump was in Tulsa last night. And there were a lot of things that came of that. No surprise there, right? So Carol and I will jump into the fray of the Trump Tulsa rally, and we'll also take your calls. In fact, John from Rochester, I ask you to please hold on because we want to get to you after this break. This is Hardline. I'm Brenda Alesi. Much more to come with Carol Calabrese right after this.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Brenda Alesi on Hardline. Joe Beamer is off today, enjoying some vacation time. And playing a little New York bump music, courtesy of John Simon, because we've been talking quite a bit about the NY27 race. Rather unusual situation with the two elections in one this Tuesday. Carol Calabrese, the political strategist, and Maziello Martucci, Calabrese's partner, is with us. And Carol also teaches at UB. And we'll go back to the phone lines to John in Rochester, where the phone has probably been embedded in your ear for a while. John, thank you so much for your patience.
Hey, Brenda. Hey, Carol. Jeff Berman was basically fired recently. He's the prosecutor down in the Southern District. And I'll tell you, I think it was a good move, because my concern is one of the biggest dangers in our country is some of these biased courts. That district down there, the district in Northern Virginia near D.C., it's as an example, in Manhattan, when Donald Trump ran for president, I think he only got 10% of the vote in Manhattan. And that's where that district court is, which means 90% voted against him. How would a conservative or a Republican get a fair trial in these districts? Another example, in D.C., one of Obama's chief attorneys when he was in the White House was violated election law by not registering in a foreign country. Barr had to drop the charges because he would have had to have the venue of the hearing, the grand jury, in the Northern Virginia courts, and he didn't think the jury pool would be cooperative, so he dropped the charges. Do you see that as being a danger, and do you agree with the Berman firing?
I do agree with that it's a danger. I think there are many courts in this country that have been dominated by far-left progressive judges, and they oftentimes rule from the bench based on political decisions as opposed to what the law says. And if you're conservative, that's very disturbing. And I think it's a good idea for Trump to do what he did 4 years ago, and he has said he is going to release a list of names of jurists, of judges, that he would consider on his A list to fill the next vacancy on the Supreme Court. I think that's a good tactic, a good strategy, and I think this could be a major issue in the upcoming election. As far as this U.S. attorney goes, you know, I'm not a conspiracy guy. I've been on radio and TV for many years, and I've never wanted to buy into, you know, these in-depth conspiracies, but I look at what I see as the incredible double standard in the application of the law that's been going on in this government now for the last 4 years. I see Paul Manafort charged, convicted of lying, and he's in solitary confinement. I see Roger Stone charged and convicted of lying. He's facing a lifetime in prison. I see Michael Flynn charged with lying. He's been destroyed financially, and he may have to face jail time. But yet I look on the other side, and I see Hillary Clinton destroying tens of thousands of emails. I see her and her staff destroying iPhones and computers with hammers. I see John Brennan lying in front of Congress under oath about the use of the Steele dossier in getting FISA warrants. I see James Clapper lying under oath in Congress saying that the American government does not intercept American cell phone calls. That was a lie. I see Comey leaking classified information. I see all the prosecutorial abuses against General Flynn and Andrew McCabe, second or third in command of the FBI, lying under oath in Congress. None of these people had their homes broken into by fully armed SWAT agents at 4 o'clock in the morning and had to go to trial and got convicted and are in solitary confinement. None of them. And I'm saying, what is going on here? Based on what I read, when the Attorney General filed his brief asking to drop the charges against General Flynn, and I would encourage anybody, everybody, go online. It's about 20 pages. It's not overly legalistic because I'm not a lawyer, but I read it and I understood it. And he outlines all the prosecutorial abuses and falsifications that went into going after General Flynn. There is no question in my mind that there are many people in this government at the bureaucratic level, at the highest levels, that have been going after Donald Trump literally from the day of his inauguration, and I don't believe they're going to give up until the eve of this election, and if he wins again, they're going to start all over again. It is really concerning to me to see unelected government officials pursuing that political agenda to the level they've been willing to go, even if it means stomping over constitutional rights that we have as citizens. So Trump, I think, has had enough.
John, thank you very much for the call. I always appreciate your insight. And Carol, let's talk about President Trump's rally last night in Tulsa.
He may have just stepped over the line, and he said, okay, I have the right to fire anybody in my administration, the executive department, that I've lost confidence in. I've lost confidence in you. If you don't resign, I'm going to fire you, and that's what happened.
Carol, let's talk about the Trump rally in Tulsa last night. About a 19,000 capacity arena was where he held his rally, and it looked like he was ready to kind of get back into that fighting spirit. Do you think it perhaps backfired on him because it wasn't filled to capacity and there was no overflow crowd? What was your take on the turnout?
Yeah, it certainly was disappointing. I don't think there's any way you can put spin on it that it wasn't a disappointment, especially with the pre-rally hype that a million people had applied for tickets. Interesting, I don't know if you saw this today, Brenda, but Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, has come out and said that was a tactic used by the left, that a lot of folks on the left went online and reserved tickets for the rally, knowing they weren't going to show up, but just to increase expectations that a million people are going to be there. And, of course, when that doesn't happen, the disappointment's even worse. I thought that was an interesting tactic that the left used to kind of sabotage the numbers. But there's no question that people didn't show up. Now, the real issue, if you're Donald Trump and his campaign, is that because people are less enthusiastic about Donald Trump and his agenda, or are they less enthusiastic about coming out to a mass gathering because of the virus?
Well, Carol, let me ask you, would you have gone to the rally?
Yes.
And so you had no qualms about the social distancing, the compliance with safety. Would you have worn a mask and gone, or would you have just gone as is?
No, if it was indoors, yes. I said, again, a good tactic would have been for Donald Trump to say, okay, because indoors or outdoors, everybody must wear a mask, but I'm going to provide the mask, and the masks are all going to be red with the words, Make America Great.
That would have been a great marketing tool.
Thousands of people with the mask on, essentially walking bumper stickers for Donald Trump. I'm surprised he didn't do that.
Yeah, I am too, actually. Hey, Carol, before we continue on with President Trump and the rally, one of our texters is asking for you to be specific on how he can get the 20 pages online that you referenced.
If I recall, this was a number of weeks ago, I just went on the Department of Justice bar Flynn motion. That should pop it up.
Bar Flynn motion. Okay, so just Google it. All right, 803-0930, back to the phone lines. Pat is with us on line two. Hello, Pat.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Kyle, first, a couple of questions. Are you consulting to anyone in these Republican campaigns?
No.
Chris Jacobs or any of them? Or to the committee?
Nope.
And not to the Erie County Republican Committee?
Nope. My firm stays out of partisan political campaigns.
Oh, okay. So now, turning to the Berman, you know, I heard you go on for 5 minutes on how you think the courts are stacked. And earlier you had mentioned that this is a republic, a representative republic. Are you saying that the voters just aren't smart enough to elect the people that would appoint the judges? Are you dismissing the elections? Because I remember somebody saying elections have consequences. And in this case, in New York, they keep electing now a completely Democratic slate, which is not good for democracy. But Mr. Berman, as I recall, was hailed as a hero, the one who was going to get justice for Donald Trump when he was appointed by Donald Trump. Is that correct?
That he was appointed by Donald Trump, yes. But there's two forces going on here with judges. First of all, as you know, on the federal level, judges are appointed for life. And so we have lots of judges that were appointed by presidents going back 2, 3, 4 cycles. Number two, and this is very frustrating to conservatives, is how many times we see so-called conservative judges appointed to courts, and we think, oh, we're finally going to get some reasonable decisions based on the Constitution, as judges are supposed to rule. And those judges move to the left. And correct me if I'm wrong, I really, in my lifetime, can't think of it happening the opposite way, where liberals appointed to the court move to the right. And the most recent example, of course, is Justice Roberts, who sided with the four liberals on the court in overturning Trump's executive order and applying a set of Roberts rules that he didn't apply to Obama when Obama passed the original executive order. So it's very frustrating, this whole judicial setup, in terms of the lifetime appointments and how that can transcend elections and trends within society, and also the fact that it seems that conservative judges have a tendency to want to be loved by the New York Times and the Washington Post and their editorial boards, and tend to move in that direction.
So using your standard, Chris Jacobs is allowed to become enlightened on the issue of abortion, but Judge Roberts isn't allowed to become enlightened on executive orders.
No,
is that your position?
Enlightened on the Constitution, okay? And what the Constitution says, that's the purpose of a judge. That's the role of a judge, not to make laws. So I don't call it enlightenment when a judge from the bench makes up his or her own rules and sets aside what Congress has done or what the Constitution says. That's the difference.
Pat, thank you very much for the call. Carol, I want to get back to the Tulsa rally and what you thought about President Trump. And a couple of things stood out to me. I watched the entire thing, and Trump looked like he was back in his element. I think he enjoys being up at that podium and talking about his triumphs, what he views as his accomplishments. But I thought a couple of things were ill-advised. When he talked about scaling back the tests because it inflates the numbers of those who are infected with COVID-19, I thought that was a mistake. And I also thought his term Kung Flu was a mistake. And the other thing that concerned me was his long, I think it was about 10 minutes, the explanation about him going down the ramp when he was addressing the cadets, and also what appeared to be difficulty drinking water. What did you think of his performance last night?
Well, it's everything Trump does has got, good parts and bad parts. Sometimes Trump can be his own worst enemy. You know, I watch the show The Five every night on Fox, and one of the commentators there is Juan Williams. And I can't tell you how many living room arguments I have with Juan Williams with some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth. But he said something a couple of weeks ago that I said to my wife, for the first time, I agree 100% with what Juan Williams said. And what he said was, right today, Donald Trump is losing this election to Donald Trump. I thought that was absolutely right on. He can be his own worst enemy. I think what he should have said about the testing is we shouldn't end it. Of course we shouldn't end it. What we should do, and this is a media problem, we should be more specific. All we're getting is raw numbers. How many people tested positive? Fine. Now I'd like to know how many people, that's a raw number. I'd like to know, what's the percentage of people testing positive to the number of tests is. I'd like to know how many of those people are asymptomatic. I'd like to know how many of those people have mild symptoms and will be able to recover at home. And I want to know what the hospitalization rate is. That would give me a complete picture of what this virus is doing and how it's impacting people, as opposed to just saying the numbers have spiked. I mean, there's no question in my mind that there is a drumbeat in the part of the media to scare people and continue this thing on in perpetuity. You just look at the Buffalo News every day.
But Carl, I don't think you can take this lightly.
More detail in the reporting on the testing, he would have been on very solid ground. In terms of the Kung Flu, I'm going to bring something up here. The Chinese, the Communist Chinese Party, has thousands, tens of thousands of people in this country who are employed by the Chinese government. They are diplomats, they are spies, they are employees, and they have been, many of them, are organized in what is called they're called to be wolf warriors. This is a Communist Party term, a wolf warrior. And the purpose of a wolf is to howl whenever anything is written or said that's anti-Communist Chinese Party. And so, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal about this a couple weeks ago. People are finding that, you know, if they send out an anti-Chinese tweet to 12 people, they're getting responses from Chinese nationals who are in this country saying this is wrong, this is outrageous, this is racist, at that level. So what happened here, early on, the Chinese Communist Party did two things very effectively. When this was being called the Wuhan virus, okay, which, again, going back in time, we had the Spanish flu, we had the Hong Kong flu, we had SARS, we had MERS, which stands for Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, we had Ebola, named after a river, we had the West Nile virus, we had the St. Louis flu. It's been very customary to name flus after where they come from. And initially, this was called the Wuhan virus. The Chinese Communist Party did two things. They first got the World Health Organization to give it a name of COVID-19, because they, frankly, own the World Health Organization. And secondly, they had these wolf warriors start to put out tweets and Facebook prompts, especially to journalists and people in the media, saying, this is racist. And the media picked that up, and frankly, they were played like a fine musical instrument, and immediately started saying, any reference to China or the city of Wuhan is racist. And so that's at play here. And just remember that whenever you see major pushback about any Chinese issue, remember that term, wolf warriors. That is a real strategy that the Chinese Communist Party employs in responding to anything that they see contrary to their interests occurring in the United States.
Carol, you know, you always have really interesting insight, and I had never heard the term wolf warrior before. But if assuming that's true, and I have no doubt that what you're saying is true, why feed into it if you're Donald Trump? I mean, and then you have Andrew Cuomo talking about how the virus came from Europe. So why have any designation? You know, it's just refer to it as the coronavirus or COVID-19. You know, in other words, it really speaks to what you're saying about how he is often his own worst enemy.
Well,
and I know he likes to have these little nicknames and terms and sort of taglines for people and situations, but to me, it just creates more division in a country that is continuing to see so much division, whether it's racial or between authorities and citizens. I just don't understand the point in doing that.
Well, there's a couple of points. First one is, I think the Chinese Communist Party needs to pay a price for how they handled this virus coming out of the city of Wuhan.
I agree.
They falsified documents, arrested doctors, lied about it, withheld information, refused to allow foreign experts to come in to get a handle on it, manipulated the World Health Organization. This was just, I mean, and now we're paying the price for that. We are paying the price for that. So
it's indefensible, Carol. I agree.
Identifying this as a virus that came from Wuhan, to me, is not racist. It's accurate, and it puts the blame back on the country that perpetrated this whole disaster for us. Donald Trump's campaign is going to be based on three issues, I believe. One will be the economy, and his argument is going to be, I rebuilt a totally stagnant economy that Obama left us, and I made it the strongest economy in the world. Now it's in the tank because of the Wuhan virus, and I'm the best person to bring it back. That's going to be issue number one. Issue number two is going to be China. Just the whole, not just the virus, but the whole trading relationship, our international relationships with them, military, defense. This is going to be, in many ways, a China election. And number three, I think the courts will certainly be a part of it, but law and order. And if these riots continue in the streets, Donald Trump is going to play that for everything it's worth.
Well, let's not forget about the economy, too, because I know Donald Trump talked about that again last night. Can it realistically recover from the pandemic? And what if there's a second wave? I mean, there's no way to predict what's going to happen, but it certainly concerns me to see so many people, whether it's protesters or people at a rally, that are shoulder to shoulder, many of whom are not wearing a mask. That concerns me about another outbreak. I do have grave concerns about how we're going to deal with this if this happens again in the fall, and then you couple that with the flu season. It could be a real issue again for all of us.
I believe it is going to happen again at some level, because remember, the lockdown was not meant to kill the virus. Lockdowns don't kill the virus.
Right.
Lockdowns only delayed the transmission of the virus. Now the question is, when we start to reconnect socially, which we're doing now, it's going to reemerge. The question is, how badly will it reemerge? My feeling is that it will be less than the first phase, because the first phase, we were kind of caught unaware about it. Now people are voluntarily social distancing. Many people are wearing masks. We're not having the big of sporting events and things like that. People are washing their hands and using hand sanitizers. So I think all of those things will mitigate it, but it's not going to eliminate it. This will not be eliminated until we reach that so-called herd immunity and or we have a vaccine. And we just have to learn to manage the risk, because the risk of having another total lockdown will be disastrous.
Absolutely. Carol, speaking of managing, it's time for me to manage the break. We are just about out of time, and I want to thank you for taking the time to join me. It's always great to have your insight. And enjoy your day. Hope you get pampered a little later today.
Thank you, Brenda. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you so much. And my thanks to John Simon, the pride of Michigan State. John Simon, the Spartan, who took care of our producing and technical work today. Thanks to John and to all of you for listening. We'll see you next week right here on Hardline.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.